everybody. I'm Dr. Deb, and welcome to another episode of PTSD and Beyond. Welcome to the PTSD and Beyond podcast, where we give you insights into post-traumatic stress, trauma recovery, healing, and beyond. I'm Dr. Deb Lind, and in each episode, I have a conversation with a guest who will stimulate your mind, touch your heart, and connect with your spirit, and also give you a greater understanding of yourself and others on this healing and recovery journey walked by so many of us before, wounded healers with lived experience and heroes. Hopefully, we'll also provide a glimpse into possibilities and purpose, hope, and inspiration. Thanks for listening and enjoy the podcast. One last thing, guys, before we dive into today's episode, if you'd like an ad-free experience and like early access to new episodes and special events, I want to let you know you can join us at patreon.com. That is patreon.com/PTSD and beyond. All right, let's do it. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Deb here with PTSD and Beyond. Today's guests, notice there's a plural. Today's guests is a brother-sister duo. We have Jim Bernica and his sister Hillary Hawkins. They're coming on the podcast today to share with you a book that they co-wrote. Now, why is this book so important? This book is an and book. What do I mean by an and book? This book is part lived experience and part what do we do now? What do we do now? Jim Bernica shares his story and his experience of being a firefighter, training, and providing services for peer support and health and safety. Health and safety. Taking care of others. And then one day he found himself needing to take care of himself. And as he began that journey, Hillary, his sister, shares what their family went through, how their family came together, and how they decided to co-write this book. The book is called Overcoming Tuesday. It is available on Amazon on May 1st. All right, guys, let's give a listen to Jim Bernica, Hillary Hawkins, their book, Overcoming Tuesday on PTSD and Beyond. Hey, everybody, it's Dr. Deb here with PTSD and Beyond. And yes, we have more guests today. Now, this is a little bit different, a little bit more special. Why? Because we have two at the same time. And we have authors of Overcoming Tuesday. Let's give a heartfelt PTSD and Beyond welcome to Jim Bernica and Hillary Hawkins. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you.
I got the name right. I get some points.
You do. You're in a bonus already.
And so I'm looking here to see, where did Hillary go?
No.
Okay.
She said, I'll do this show. And she was there for 5 seconds and said, I did it. There's proof of me. I'm out.
That's all right. No worries. You know what? It happens. It happens. And I think maybe we should do a bloopers edition at some point. Just keep it in because it's fun and funny. I mean, why not? Right?
They barely have internet in South Carolina.
I don't know what happened. It just kicked me out.
That's all right. No worries.
That's what karma is, Hillary.
I need to preface to listeners that we have a sibling team here.
Yeah. Yeah.
We have a book.
She was about to say her connection is unstable.
It's all right.
She's unstable.
Well, you know, we have, sometimes we do have challenges that we can relate to technology, right? We feel a little unstable sometimes. Technology is unstable sometimes. And this is an example of how, where we develop awareness, resilience, and we have to go through some mucky times before we get there.
I'm about to start box breathing.
Are you?
Just to get through this. No, No, it's funny because we talked for like 10 or 15 minutes before you hit the record button, and within 20 seconds of you hitting that button, she disappears.
That's all right. We have a book, and it launches tomorrow, Overcoming Tuesday. How did you come up with the name, first of all? I'm really intrigued about that.
So I did an interview with the local news, and it was all about post-traumatic stress, and it was kind of my role within the fire department and also the union, because I was the department's wellness coordinator, and I was the union's health and safety coordinator and peer support coordinator. And so I was just doing this interview, and one of the things I said was, you know, the typical citizen usually has a, you know, one or two traumatic events throughout their lifetime. And for us, it's just another day. You know, it's Tuesday. And that I did all this, and you know, it's, when I look back and play the video, I mean, it's all just a big lie. I mean, I'm a big hypocrite at that point in time. You know, I'm encouraging everybody else to get help, but in reality, the truth was I was falling apart, and I had so much shame and guilt, and I just, the optics of at that time, and I realize now how completely ridiculous they are. But the optics then was, what is it going to look like if the guy that's helping everybody else needs help?
Mm-hmm.
And that actually delayed me really going and getting help, really by months. And that story that just really stuck with Hillary that Tuesday. And she ended up, when I ended up going to the IAFF Center of Excellence, I went for 40 days, and looking even back, I would say I probably left earlier than I should have. But when I came home, she had written a poem called Tuesday, and it kind of just stuck. And so when we were searching for, you know, titles of the book, it kind of made sense. Overcoming Tuesday, like getting past that Tuesday.
Well, it's beautiful. Hillary, do you happen to have any parts of the poem that you could share with us?
Doesn't seem like she's there.
No, that's okay.
We included the poem in the book.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah, so it's kind of there for everybody to take in. And I don't know if I'm going to be the guy that can really read this, because it hits me every time I try. But
and you were also talking before about the stigma piece, right? That this is a common question that people will ask, even me. You know, they'll ask, well, who takes care of you when you're taking care of everybody else? That's the first question people ask. And then the second thing they usually ask is, do you ever ask for help? You know, and I do ask for help. But how did you get to that point where, you know, you decided, I need to go get some help?
Oh, you know, I felt like for those few months that I was having ideation, and I was all sorts of problems at work, really with management, just making my job that much easier, even though that all I was trying to do is take care of our own.
Sure.
And like I really had this armor on me, and I acted, I mean, like, give me an Oscar kind of performance for months. And I finally had one of my friends kind of just see through it all and call me out on it.
Mm-hmm. And, the mask, right?
Oh yeah. And when he did, I mean, that's when it became more like I couldn't hide it anymore. Like once I was called out on it, it was over for me. And I lasted about a week and a half longer after that before, like, it just became too much. And I finally, you know, I remember I broke down in front of my mother. Yeah, it just sucked. And I mean, to the point where we're talking about breaking down, we're talking about I was unable to drive my truck from her house to my house.
Oh, wow.
Like it was to that point where I just was completely useless. And so I had to have my dad drive my truck. And I finally got home and got in front of my wife and just, it was finally like, I kind of like the, you know, the gig was up. Like I just was honest. And my wife said, you know, the resources better than anyone. What do you want to do?
That's powerful right there. You know, the resources.
Yeah. Well, and that's like, I have made that phone call to the Center of Excellence 5 times beforehand for other people.
Mm-hmm.
And got them there. So it's a phone. I mean, I'm used to it. I know, you know, running through it, I know what they need. But dialing it myself, and accepting that I had gotten to that point, that was hard. And it was an internal fight for,
yeah,
kind of that afternoon, evening.
Dialing it. And dialing it for myself.
Right? It was, I mean, I talk about how, like, I mean, that phone at that point in time, like it was really heavy. Like it was not your typical weight of an iPhone. There was more to it. And, you know, I finally made that call. It sucked. And the very next day I'm on a plane and by lunchtime, I'm in Maryland.
Wow.
And it was, I mean, if you can imagine, like you're home one night and then you're gone and you don't know when you're coming home. And so, I mean, it's so abrupt. Like, I mean, I just remember scrambling even that evening, trying to do automatic bill pay and just let people know what was going on. And I made the mistake too. Like I called the Center of Excellence. As a nickname, I would just call it Maryland. I'm going to Maryland. And there were people that either thought I was just going there to visit, or that I was going there to teach or something. Like they didn't really think that I was going there as a patient. I mean, that's how good I hid all stuff, all my suffering. And it was very chaotic. And, I abandoned my family and, luckily we had, you know, between her family and my family, everybody stepped up. Our friends stepped up. I mean, little stuff like the lawn, I mean, neighbors mowed the lawn or they, you know, took care of the boys and shuffled them here or there. I mean, just all that stuff.
All sorts of community support.
Yeah. It just, but it definitely did suck. And even when I went home, I'll tell you this too. Like I, having my background, I really truly thought that I was going to show up there and I was going to be there for like 2 weeks. And cause I knew it all, you know, and I was going to be back home. No big deal. And like I said, that was not the case. It was 40 days. And I think they actually let me out earlier. I mean, I fought to get out, but looking back and knowing how I still had issues and still kind of suffered afterwards, like I should have stayed there longer. And that's hindsight. But I never went back to work. I never went out back on the street. They, you know, let me do restricted duty and hid me away at radio repair for 90 days, which was great. But I just needed more time is really mm-hmm. what I needed more than anything. And the city really wasn't willing to give me that time. So it kind of forced my hand into retiring prematurely.
And that in itself is difficult too, because we have different stages of things that are brought to our attention, sometimes things that maybe we don't want to see. And I'd like to circle back to something that you said about family. And Hillary, how did the family bring itself together? I'm not saying that it wasn't, but what are some of the things that you can share with our listeners about when one of our loved ones is struggling, ways that it brings the family together, and not to cope, but
but unify, to be stronger and to really rely on one another? What were some of the challenges and then also some of the strengths?
Well, first I want to address when he said he abandoned his family, because I would hardly call fighting for your life abandoning your family. You had to leave so that you could be here for them. So I don't like when you say that. It makes me sad. So we had a text thread, my mom, my dad, my sister, and Lauren, my brother's wife. And we would all just kind of talk. So he was only allowed on the phone so often. So a lot of times, like, he would call Lauren and then she would just update the group, or he would call mom, and whoever he talked to would update everybody so that he didn't have time to make 5-6 different phone calls to all of us. So we just tried to encourage each other. We tried to really rally around Lauren, since the boys and her were kind of the primary focus. So for me, being far away, that looked a little bit more like me just calling her, me texting her, just checking in on them, sending crumble cookies. My mom and dad and sister and Lauren's family, they did the heavy lifting. They showed up for the boys, helped out with activities, school, getting on the bus, off the bus, because Lauren also works full time. So I think there was definitely a part of us that was always a little bit afraid. We didn't understand really what happened. It was, he was okay and then he wasn't. So we were all just kind of trying to put, we had little puzzle pieces that we would try and piece together, but we could never figure it out. And honestly, until we sat down and did this book, I didn't have the whole picture. Once we did, I was like, oh my gosh, I had no idea. And now this makes so much sense. But before, we were just trying to put things together, and it just wasn't really making sense.
Do you think that the process of writing the book also added to the level of understanding for the family members, as well as to help with the healing?
Oh, yeah. None of us knew, the extent of what he was going through. We knew that there were some things that he was struggling with, but we had no idea the depths of it. So yeah, when my parents read this book, they'll both tell you that they cried because they just had no idea. And my dad was like, gosh, I just wish I knew, I could have helped him. And I think it really, you look at yourself, how did I miss this? We should have picked up on this. But Jimmy made it so clear, I was lying. I was acting fine. It was the hardest acting job of my life, but we didn't pick up on it. So yeah, once it was all written down so we could all see this big picture, it was a lot of clarity for our family.
Wow. And how did that make you feel, Jim, to know that people understood?
Well, I mean, this whole thing has been a mystery. I was working, I was present, I was in a pretty important role, and that was where I was hand selected to initiate this, and then I'm gone, and nobody knew. Mm-hmm. Nobody knew why. Nobody knew what. And I'm glad that now they'll finally understand my why and how and what really truly happened and how I ended up this way. And I did want to go back. I think one of the hardest things that I dealt with when I was gone was I did get my phone every couple of days there. And I remember one day seeing, because I have a shared calendar with my wife, and seeing that my oldest son had an appointment, and I asked her, I said, what is this? What's going on? And she said, well, your oldest, my oldest Jameson, who was at that time, I think he was 8. And she said, ever since you left, he's been acting out. And so now I got a appointment with the clinician for him. And so it's like, I sat there and I was just like, now I'm affecting everybody else. Now I'm affecting my 8-year-old, and it made me feel you know, lesser than dirt. Hearing that, I mean, that just hurt. Like, my pain is causing him pain. And that's not cool. That's not fair. So, I mean, it was, to me, it was an incentive to try to get out, you know, as soon as I could. And looking back again, I think I made that mistake. I left too early. But I mean, and again, like at that time, I'm trying to do the right thing, but it was, it really wasn't. So yeah.
Do you give yourself permission now though, to recognize yourself for doing the right thing?
Yeah. Yeah, I do. And it's because it's scary to see. It's scary to think about what happened if I would have kept going on.
Right.
Like it's, I mean, it truly is. So, I'm glad I made that phone call. I'm glad I went. Yes. I mean, all that whole period sucked. But I can also now look at where I am now, and I don't necessarily, well, I don't think I'll ever say it was worth it, but, I am in a much better place now, and things are good. And I'm glad I'm still around to be present. And I really, I mean, this is a second chance. And even, to an extent, I would say that it's, like there's a lot of good that comes out of this now. Cause I realize now, it sounds crazy, but I realize how fortunate I am. You know, in a couple of weeks, my boys will be out of school and I'll be here. And we're just every day going to go on adventures. And I mean, again, that's special.
Mm-hmm.
How many people out there wishes they could spend all summer with their kids when they're still young and they still like you?
That's true.
You know?
Oh,
so,
boy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean,
still
this is
spend time with you, right?
Yeah, this is special. But I had to go through an awful lot to get to this point.
I appreciate you sharing that, because I'm sure that there's a listener that is sitting here right now saying, you know what, that sounds like me. That actually could be me talking. That could be me talking. And I'd like, if you could, to share some snippets about the book, because before we started recording, one of the things that I heard was it's a storybook about the journey, and it's a resource.
That's right.
And it's a resource. So I like the "and" piece too, because sometimes you either get the resource and then there's no substance to it, and people are left with, well, this doesn't even relate to me, so what am I doing? Or then sometimes you get a book and it's like, I appreciate listening to the story and it helps me feel better because I know I'm not alone. But I like the "and" piece. I like the "and" piece of what both of you put together. So talk with us a little bit about the journey of creating the book, because you guys had a great story before we started recording.
Yeah, so I'll even go a little bit behind that, a little bit before that. So I had, I taught at FDIC, which is the big firefighter conference every year. It's a big circus in Indianapolis. 35,000 people from all, firefighters from all over the world come. And when you teach there, they also ask you to write an article. And so my article was, my class and article was all about a wellness program for your fire department. And so I remember making an outline for the article, and the outline was like 8 pages alone. And I realized like, this is bigger than just a magazine article. Like, this could be a book. And, but at that time it was looking more like a textbook, which that's not my style at all. But so when we started to really talk about if we can do this book and how it would look, you know, we knew we were going to tell my story, but we really wanted to try to incorporate a lot of those lessons, a lot of those items that were in that outline. I realized we could very easily insert them into the relevant chapters, you know? And really that's how that came to be. Let's tell the story. but let's also add whatever type of wellness advice and resources that are relevant and pertinent to that particular chapter, so that if somebody has whatever that issue is, I mean, it's the answer is right there in front of them, and they can go look at it and hopefully get whatever help they're needed. And, with the idea of just easing whatever they are, like, so tell my story, get it out there, but help people along the way. And hopefully they don't make a lot of the silly, dumb mistakes that I made too, or have the crappy luck that I did.
Yeah, it's like a both and. Like, we pretty much used his story to give lessons. Like, this is what you don't want to do, and this is why, because this is where you land. And then there are so many resources. We are both really excited about adding resources because we want it to be something that you can pick up, recognize, like, yourself and maybe some of these stories, and then there's a resource that you can go to help you. And it's not just like PTSD or anxiety. It covers cancer, it covers weight, it covers bullying, it covers organizational betrayal. It's so many things. There's so many layers that I really think that there's something in there that everybody could learn from.
And it comes out
May 1st.
May 1st. Okay. And where is it going to be launched at on May 1st?
The Amazon.
Amazon, yep.
On Amazon. So guess what, everybody that's listening, and thank you for sharing that. There is a hyperlink in the show notes that'll take you directly to the Amazon page. And if you happen to connect with Hillary and Jim, can you let them know too, please? Hey, I heard you guys on PTSD and Beyond. That's going to be really helpful. So that way, you know, it's always nice to know, well, how'd you find me? How did you discover what we're doing? How did you, you know, come across the book? What were your thoughts about the book? And what did it make a difference for you? How did it make a difference for you? What actually spoke to you? What called to you? What made you decide to say, you know what, I'm going to pause doing this, and instead I'm going to do that? I can see probably some of those actual people actually saying, hey, this is what it meant to me. After writing the book and looking back on it, what are some of those lessons? What are some of those reflective lessons
that we want people to know?
That you want people to know, or maybe that you've also learned yourself?
I would say you're not alone. No matter how isolated you feel, how bad it seems, I promise you are not the only person in that position. There's always hope. No matter how dark it is, no matter how hopeless it seems, there is, and take it from him, because he gave up. He almost gave up, and now he's found purpose through his pain. So there is always hope. And I would also say, please ask for help. Just ask anybody. Just don't wait until it's too late.
She's pretty good, isn't she?
I was going to say, that's beautiful. I love this too. This is a great one. Purpose through pain.
She's good. Yeah. You know, one of my things was forgiveness. And it's, I'm not necessarily even talking about forgiving other people, but like forgiving yourself. That is not something that I ever thought of or ever did beforehand, but I had to learn how to do that. And just to give grace and have grace. That was a struggle too. But I think looking back at all this stuff, it just, I think it's so much easier now to just focus and prioritize on what truly matters. And there was so much of what I was doing that in the grand scheme of things, it didn't matter. Like, It just doesn't. Like, you can have all the titles in the world by your name, and, you know, but when you, on your gravestone, what are the, you know, they're not going to put your positions. They're going to say father, husband,
right,
son, whatever. Like, that's what matters. So I think it's just, the whole thing gave me perspective, and it just truly allow me to focus on what matters. And my kid, I talk about, you know, the key to work-life balance is retiring. And, like, I just have so much better balance now. And it's just like what I do is what I want to do. And I mean, it's just simplifies things.
When working with other people, have you seen that they've developed the same mindset?
As far as the forgiveness and patience and.
Yeah. Have you seen it happen in your family also?
There's some people. Actually, it's funny. I don't know if you ever noticed it, Deb, but people who have suffered and went through whatever, like those are the people that I get along the best with now. Cause we all know where we came from and we know where we want to go. And there's this relatability. And it goes without saying. It's interesting, but those are my people now, and we have accountability, you know, amongst ourselves. There's a lot of people that are still essentially doing what I was doing beforehand, and if they don't change, that's liable to catch up with them. So I mean, when I talk to other peer support coordinators, like I am very big on just warning, like, hey, you have to have boundaries. You have to be able to step away. You have to have a backup plan. You have to be able to say no. Like, we struggle saying no to people. I think that's part of, I mean, it's really part of our job. We help everybody, like, no questions asked. If somebody calls,
yes,
we show up and we're there and we help out. I mean, it's just how we're built, but, that constant of just, saying yes, 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 it could take a toll. Cause when you, and I'm stealing this from my buddy, Dr. Donnie, but you know, whenever you say yes to something, you're saying no to something else.
Right.
And, I think in general, we struggle with that.
Absolutely. Hillary, can you echo that?
Yeah. And I think I would say that he was met with a lot of grace from family and friends once they figured out like what actually happened. I think that they were just happy that he was okay. And nobody was mad that he didn't tell us, because we realized it wasn't about us. It wasn't like, well, why couldn't you trust me? It wasn't about us. It was about him and where he was at. And I think we're all just really committed to just helping him stay on course, whatever that looks like.
And I hid it from everybody, but like in particular, my family, my close ones, I was trying to protect them. And I look back and go, I think I went about that the wrong way. Clearly, you know, I really needed to be able to communicate and talk about this stuff openly. And for whatever reason, I held back and I didn't. And I just ate it all, swallowed it down, let it join everything else. And I think my hope was still that somehow, some way that I was just going to climb out of this hole and I was going to be okay. And not to warn anybody or worry anybody that I was going to figure it out. But what I realized was I couldn't have figured it out on my own. Right. I had to ask for help, because that hole was already way too deep. And it was nothing that I could get out on my own.
What are three nuggets of suggestions that you can share with our listeners that could help them with that next step? Because you have experience with the next step. And then Hillary, also from your perspective of ways that family members and friends can be supportive for a person that they care about taking that next step?
I mean, I think the first thing is communication, and you need to be able to talk about this stuff. And it's if it's with your spouse, I mean, you don't have to go over details of stuff, but you need to be able to openly talk about this stuff. And if you're not in a relationship where you can do that, then talk to a clinician, talk to a peer. Like, but we need to be able to like get this stuff out and talk about it. I mean, that's the first thing is communicating and doing that again to where you're not hurting anybody else or scaring anybody else. And I think there is a way to actually do that. So that's the first thing, communication. I think the next thing, just realizing that you are human yourself and you can only take on so much. A lot of what I was dealing with was, you know, whether you want to call it secondary or vicarious trauma, when you're dealing with your own peers and they're your friends and they're having a tough time, I found myself hitching on and going on a ride for them. And if they did good, I did good. And if they did bad, I was right there with them.
Mm-hmm.
And I, you know, you really need to separate, be able to separate that and not go for that ride, which is easier said than done. And then I think the third thing I would say is I had a thought and it went. So
it's okay.
I don't know. Go ahead, Hill. Let me see if I can think of it.
Okay. I was going to say, as like a family member to a first responder, and I've learned this through going through this stuff with him, because this is stuff that I didn't really recognize, was you need to give them grace because we don't know what they've gone through. And sometimes you just need to come to the... You just need to accept that you're probably not going to be able to fix them, but just let them know that, hey, I'm here. You're not alone. Sometimes all you can do is just sit in the suck with them. Like, this sucks, but I'm here. I'm right here with you.
Right.
And this, I'm not leaving you, not judging you. I'm here. And that's something that I've tried to do with my brother, because I realize I can't fix, you know, what's happened to you, but I'm not going anywhere. Your stories don't scare me. You know, you're not alone. Like, no matter how you feel, no matter what that lying voice says to you, you are never alone. So I feel like I can't emphasize that enough, because I feel like that's where we're losing people, because they feel like they can't turn to loved ones, and you can.
That's really powerful about the lying voice that you just said, because so many times people believe that lying voice, and it really is a voice that is telling a lie to us.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that.
And also, like with my brother, and I would tell him, but I would just pray so much over him, pray to him, pray over him, just covered him in prayer, and just knew that some of this stuff, you know, as a human, you can't really fix, but you can pray about it. God can fix it. He can soften your heart. He can open your eyes. So I would say that too.
Did you think of it, Jim? Did it come to you? No, that's okay. Well, I'll tell you what. How about, I'm just going to say it, right? Because we already talked about it before. Well, we'll have you come back. And then you can say, hey, remember that last time I was on the show? I thought about that thing. Send me an email and I'll be the reminder. I'll be the reminder.
It'll come to him right after he clicks off of here.
Isn't it? That's usually how it happens, right? But I do want to say thank you so much for being on today and for sharing your story, for sharing your experience about writing the book, for sharing the journey, for also Hillary, for your support, for showing that, you know, family is there, that we do this. This is what family does.
Right.
It's what family does. And family doesn't need to be biological either. Family is the people and the person that's with you, that exactly with what you said, your story doesn't scare me and I'm not going to go away. And that's what part of PTSD and Beyond is about. So I appreciate both of you for coming on today and for being here and for sharing your gifts with our listeners all around the world, because it is speaking to somebody. Like I always say, information is here in our head, but what speaks to us at our heart. So thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having us.
You bet. Dr. Deb with PTSD and Beyond, you know what I'm going to say, we're stronger together, we're better together, and take what resonates and go beyond.